You're listening to 23 Jungle Tales on the Sports Objective. Between now and opening day, we will talk to 23 former Pirate baseball players about their path to East Carolina, their time in the purple and gold, and what they're up to now. Now let's talk Pirate baseball. Welcome into the Sports Objective. We have a game day edition of 23 Jungle Tales for you as we're catching up with Luke Cherry. And Luke played shortstop for the Pirates in 2002 and 2003. And as you saw there on the open, was, or and still is, East Carolina's all-time single-season assist leader with 208, a record that was nearly broken by Dale Mullenauer back in 2006. But it is still holding up here. Nearly two decades or so after Luke finished his Pirate career. But Luke, welcome into the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I kicked a few balls that year too.
How'd you like that? How'd you like that two decades reference there, Luke?
Yeah, I know, man.
Yeah. Not trying to insult our guests, but hey, I'm about your age as well, Luke, just slightly younger. So hey, I'm getting up there in years as well. But no, we appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on. Let's just talk about, I know you're a California native, talk about your high school career. And I know you played your first couple years of college ball at Chabot College there in the greater San Francisco area. What, about 30 minutes or so outside of San Fran?
Yeah. And the kind of the Oakland East Bay area. I went to San Ramon High School and played in a pretty competitive section, if you will. Guys like Dontrell Willis and CC Sabathia and Jimmy Rollins all came from this area. And De La Salle, I think you guys are familiar with that school, was in our league. In fact, we ended up beating them at the Oakland Coliseum my senior year for the section title. Ended up getting some small offers from some local schools like UC Davis, where our guy Brett Lindgren is currently coaching. They were D2 back in the day, and I decided I wanted to go to junior college and get bigger and stronger and develop a little bit more because you know I'm still waiting on my growth spurt. But yeah, I had a successful stint at Chabot. Was a we called it JUCO All-American. We weren't part of the JUCO national system, so it was just a California-specific award. And was, ended up at ECU, and it was super memorable, and all the relationships that I have with all of my ex-teammates and some of the guys that were kind of hung around after their careers in town, I got to know them too, so I miss all of them and stay in touch with quite a few of them.
Luke, growing up in the Bay Area, were you a Giants or an A's fan?
I'm a big A's guy.
Are you? Okay. So you came up, based on when you played, you came up, you were a kid around the time they were going to the World Series every year there, 88, 89, 90.
Yeah. The Bash Brothers. Believe it or not, I was 9 years old. I was in the parking lot at Candlestick when that earthquake hit.
The earthquake, yeah.
That was nuts.
What was that like? You said you were in the parking lot at the Candlestick when the San Francisco earthquake hit. I mean, what was you were 9 years old. What was that like? Do you remember the panic? And I remember, it was huge national news.
Yeah, the parking lot was on landfills, so instead of the earth going back and forth, it started to roll like waves. So you could see all the cars kind of going in that motion. And I remember my dad panicking, telling us to look at the ground because it's kind of like a movie. He thought the ground was going to split wide open.
Oh, my.
And I remember just staring up at the stadium lights and watching them sway back and forth, which was pretty nuts. But yeah, the whole thing was just surreal because the freeways collapsed. You didn't have cell phones back then, so you hear reports about the Bay Bridge collapse, so yep. You're thinking about the whole thing being in the water. And I just, yeah, it was wild.
How did y'all have trouble getting home? I mean, what was?
Yeah. Yeah, it took us 5 hours because all the bridges were closed. So we had to drive around the bay down to San Jose and then back up north. So it was, yeah, clearly I remember it well.
That is crazy. Yeah, that's something that's always interested me. I watched a YouTube video not long ago of news coverage. It was like all the live news feed from started with the World Series and then went from there to different live news coverage in San Francisco. Kind of as it happened of the earthquake. Yeah, that's interesting. I'd like to talk more about that, but we can't spend the whole damn show talking about the earthquake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that 30 for 30.
Oh, that's a good one. Yep.
I need to watch that.
And of course, most of those 30 for 30s, pretty much anyone I've seen, I've enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're good.
But Luke, getting back to your recruitment out of Chabot College, just talk about during those years, the Pirates under Keith LeClair were coming off three consecutive number one seeds and having won a regional, hosted the Super Regional against Tennessee in 2001. So just talk about your recruitment and which coach was handling it and what it was like being recruited by Keith LeClair and that staff.
Coach Mack, it was the one that recruited me. And I wasn't high on the list just because Lee Delfino's future was kind of uncertain. And they came out and saw me early on at Chabot. And I think I struggled at the plate, which is not a surprise when Coach Mack was there. But then I caught fire mid-year and was leading the state and hitting, and Coach Mack reached back out. And at that time, it looked like Lee was going to move on to the draft. So I got an opportunity. And, I by no means was I a big-time recruit that came in. I came in with the mentality that I just had to make the team. And I think you talked to some of the guys, too, preseason. I was a little probably took myself a little too seriously in that regard.
What other opportunities did you have coming out of junior college? Who else was on you?
I was an academic qualifier. So after my freshman year, I got recruited by Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and Florida International, and actually went to Florida International and spent the fall there, went through fall ball, and I just realized I wasn't ready to play yet, missed home. Had a girlfriend back here, so I was just like, I'm going back to junior college. And the coach at the time, Danny Price at Florida International, had a lot of Carolina ties, and so I started getting calls from those schools because they were checking up to see if I was a problem, right? Because I left.
Okay, I got you. And Florida International is Florida Atlantic now. Who's got the really good program of those two schools? I got them mixed up.
They've both been competitive, yeah, off and on. When I was there, they went to the Super Regional against Mark Pryor and USC. They had a pretty talented squad.
Yeah, both of them, like Luke saying, have certainly had their success.
Yeah. I think, too, they had a really good run when what's his name? Turtle Thomas was there?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you were coming in, that had to be, talk about traveling all the way across the country like that. I guess you'd already done it to FIU, and then there a couple years later, you're doing it to Greenville, North Carolina, and nearly somewhere between 3,000 miles. What was that like? On one hand, I know it had to be obviously extremely exciting to come to a program that was on the doorstep of Omaha.
Yeah, it was. And the town itself was really cool. And the fact that there was a football program. And I mean, to be honest with you, it felt right. The people that I met, and it just felt like I belonged there. And I think that's a big part of the equation when kids are trying to figure out what schools they want to go to.
Yeah, you being a California kid, and you did have the experience at FIU, but that's Miami and that's Florida, and that's not the South. So what was there had to be a little bit of a cultural difference between being out in the Bay Area and being in Eastern North Carolina. So what was that adjustment like for you?
Yeah, well, people being so nice wasn't hard to get used to, but it was a culture shock. The food was different. I missed really good Mexican food and Italian food. But you know, the other foods that are endemic to you guys was cool to try. And the pretty girls, they weren't hard to look at in the South. So that was a big score.
Yeah, that you know, you kind of, I'm thinking about that. You lived in the Bay Area, California's known for beautiful women. Then you went to Miami. They're known for their beautiful women, and then East Carolina prides itself on having the best looking co-eds in North Carolina. So you make good choices.
Yeah, well, it was education, right? That's why.
Absolutely. In one way or another.
Yeah.
So, Luke, going into that 2002 season, obviously the final year of the Keith LeClair era, and, you know, you were coming in, Coach LeClair had been diagnosed with ALS there in the summer. I want to say it was July of 2001. He had been showing some effects during the Super Regional and prior to that, soreness, throwing BP, et cetera, that he typically had not had. So what was that like being – there with Coach LeClair when I know he was still present for sure, but the day-to-day operations, a lot of that was done more so than had been in the past by Coach Easton and also Kevin McMullen, who was the interim – oh, he may not have technically been the interim head coach, but he was the one that was coaching third and carrying out a lot of those duties.
Yeah. Yeah, they kept it kind of quiet in the beginning. I remember through fall ball – Coach LeClair still had the ability to speak. He was starting to slur a little bit, but he was running the show. And as things got a little bit worse, he always made an effort to be out there and to coach as much as he could. A lot of cool memories and stories from, I remember just the fall ball conditioning and him being out there challenging us, and a couple times during practices where we just weren't performing at our best. You know, he had a really cool way of getting the best out of everyone. And he didn't have to yell. It was just a really soft touch that he had where you just wanted to run through walls for him. And I know that's probably a common story that you hear from everybody, but it's so true. And then the family atmosphere that he created is something that's just forever lasting. You know, everybody that I played with, just we bonded on a number of different levels. And it wasn't just because he was sick. It was because of the type of person that he was.
Yeah, like you're saying, those teams prior to 2002, obviously his first 4 years, especially 99 through 2001, were highly successful, and those characteristics were typical of all of his clubs.
Yeah, he was a special dude.
So during that 2002 season, Pirates got off to an excellent start, but then they're midway through, maybe two-thirds of the way through, started struggling a bit, but then started playing a little bit better ball down the stretch going into the CUSA tournament, which was being hosted at Granger Stadium. And that was a memorable run with Coach LeClair down the right field line.
Oh, man. That whole period of time was very emotional. I mean, Coach Easton and Coach Mack were pretty young back then. And, you know, Coach LeClair was young. And just thinking about what they were having to deal with and manage us as kids trying to cope with, this death sentence, essentially. I think that impacted everyone's play. And we all put a lot of pressure on ourselves to succeed because we knew how much it meant to Coach LeClair. So I think there was that rough patch there, but then it ultimately brought us together, and the conference tournament at Granger Stadium was kind of do or die, right? We had to win that thing to ensure a spot in a regional.
Yep.
And yeah, that day was pretty fun against Houston.
Still see Davey Penny with the key sign, yeah, and then the water cooler being dumped on the windshield of the van.
Yeah. Yep. In fact, no one knows this story. Not to toot my own horn, I broke up the no-hitter that day, and Coach Eason came up to me in the dugout, and he reminded me, he said, "Hey, if Coach LeClaire was here, what would he tell you right now?" And it kind of dates back to that note that Coach LeClaire wrote me earlier in the year, which was kind of his last bit of coaching. But Coach Eason said, "You know, frickin' relax and stop thinking." And I just thought that was a cool connection. And those little bits of coaching that those guys would do just to, again, get the most out of us.
You talked about that note that Coach LeClaire wrote you. That kind of came up on the most recent Jungle Tale prior to this one with Coach Eason, talking about some of the devotions that Coach LeClaire wrote in his book, Coaching Third. And just obviously they're great devotions anyway, but just knowing what he was going through when he wrote those, and that he was writing those with his eyes using his eye gaze computer, and that made it even more special.
Yeah, that bit of technology was pretty awesome. I just helping extend his ability to communicate for a few years. Man, he did it, I'm sure you guys are familiar with all the visits that he would get from players, you know, current and former. And I know he loved that. And I know he loves sitting down and not just talking about baseball, but just talking about us as people and what we wanted out of life. And he continued to coach us, you know, beyond the field. And I remember that really fondly too.
Yeah, no doubt. Keith was amazing. I mean, there's not a former player that we talk to that doesn't have something to say about Keith. And we've had his daughter on the show a couple of times. She's an amazing person too, in medical school right now.
And, yeah.
A lot of people, you know, I think a lot of people, their greatness are exaggerated after they pass. You see that a lot. Nobody wants to speak ill of the dead. And with Keith, it's 100% true. His greatness is not exaggerated. He was as great as not only as a coach as people make him out to be, but as a human being.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's had such a big impact on my life. I can't even really put it into words.
Yeah.
And like we were saying in the pre-show, I mean, you think about it, guys, he was the head coach of East Carolina for 5 seasons from 98 to 2002, and it's like he was there 15 years.
Right.
The impact that he had.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Florida had made him an offer right after that.
I think I remember what you're referring to, Luke. I think it was the University of Georgia.
Georgia, okay.
But yes, whether it was Georgia, Florida, one of those SEC programs, there was an offer on the table.
Yeah.
And Cliff has said the same thing. Alabama offered him. So it's
And also Mississippi State, even though they may not have officially
offered.
They say
they didn't, Bubba.
Yeah, they say they didn't, but apparently their AD came to Greenville and was shunned. But
he was just coming. He wanted some good barbecue. You can't get it in Starkville.
Speaking of good barbecue, and then we'll get back to the baseball career, Luke, but Kyle earlier asked you as far as, you know, some of the food, or actually you referenced how the Mexican food here wasn't what it was in California. So talk about Eastern North Carolina barbecue. How long was it before you tried some Eastern North Carolina?
I tried it quick. I think there was a Coach Whitfield event that we attended that I had it right away. And yeah, I did get barbecue. To me, you guys are familiar with the differences, and it took me it was surprising. I didn't quite understand it, but then I grew to like it a lot.
Yeah, the when you say barbecue, a lot of people will immediately expect, oh, you mean ribs and chicken and sauce,
right?
Or some people think you're talking about a damn grill when they say right. Barbecue. But in Eastern North Carolina, it is a whole hog smoked with the only sauce you're going to get on it is vinegar and peppers. And,
yep.
You're going to have coleslaw, potato salad, maybe Brunswick stew. So if you ain't used to it, it'll surprise you.
No.
So Luke, talk about your first memories, first impression of the jungle. But obviously, this is 23 Jungle Tales for a reason, because the jungle means so much. It's synonymous with East Carolina baseball. So what was your first memories of the jungle?
Well, Brian, Wild Bill, man, those guys. Yeah, warming, stretching in the jungle was out there representing. That was unbelievable. You guys know too. Brian and Bill were they walked me out on my senior day, right? My parents couldn't make it.
Oh wow.
Okay, yeah. I've gotten to know Brian Dilday, like you say, and we've had Brian Dilday and Todd Viverette, who's one of the Megaphone guys, the redheaded. He's been there nice. Since those days or shortly after.
It, pretty special tradition.
I can only imagine how opposing teams tire of the one up, one down, and all the other routines they have.
Bubba, yeah. you want to do 23 Jungle Tales? We should do a spin on this next year, where we have players from teams that have played in the original jungle back through the day. Maybe some old CAA players and stuff. You'd probably get some really good stories about the jungle.
I can imagine. We need to try to get Mike Roberts on. Mike Roberts, obviously the coach of the Tar Heels prior to Mike Fox, and back in, I guess it was 1990, Luke. Coach Eason, we shared this story with him because his brother was a rugby player and was part of this incident. So we're playing the Tar Heels at Harrington Field, and it was one of the rugby guys' birthday. So they stripped his clothes off of him as soon as the game was over and threw him over the outfield fence. And he's running from left field to center or right, whatever. I wasn't there, unfortunately. But and then Coach Mike Roberts.
Unfortunately.
Coach Mike Roberts in North Carolina was pointing out that direction. He said, that is why I will never come here again to play.
What? The jungle got me in a little trouble. They used to yell Luke as the ball was hit to me, right? And when we went to Clemson in that championship of the regional, we were getting smoked. And Clemson's fans picked up on this, called a tradition or whatever. But Clemson was all over me. Every step that I took, their fans were yelling my name. And I couldn't do anything right that game. I don't think I made any errors, but, man, I don't know if you guys remember that, but
I was there that day, Luke. 21-1. The first pitch of the game, Zane Green took it deep for Clemson.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of insult to injury. We're slapping fives after the game, and their 5-year-old bat boy just gets in my face and yells, "Luke, just to chump me one last time before we went packing home."
Did you kick him across the field?
Yeah, no.
Hey, since you brought up Brian Dilday, I hate to throw Brian under the bus, but as all Pirate fans, he was frustrated that day down at Clemson. And I think Florida State had swept Clemson that year. So Dilday started doing the tomahawk chop.
Okay.
and that was when Clemson had like the 10 or 11 run inning.
Oh man!
And so the Clemson fans looked up at him, and they said, "Why don't you go ahead and go down to Tallahassee? You can probably get there by the time this inning's over."
That's good.
So I didn't think it was too funny at the time, but after the fact, I was like, "Hey, that was pretty good on the Clemson fans' part."
Look, I got to ask you this question. It's a stupid question, and Bubba's not surprised I ask stupid questions all the time. But as soon as I heard your name, you know, I remember you when you played here. But you're not who came to mind when I heard your name. When I heard Luke Cherry, I immediately think of the late actor Luke Perry.
I'm sure
you've gotten that your whole life.
Yeah, he's a little better looking than me.
Well, he's dead now, so no.
Yeah.
But I just can imagine with Luke Cherry, people go, Luke Perry? I was like, anyway.
So, Luke, in addition to what took place at Granger Stadium with the Pirates winning the Conference USA tournament, talk about what are some other your positive memories, so whether it's from that 2002 season or your senior season in 2003, which we'll talk more about under Coach Randy Mazey.
Yeah, I did. From 2002, that Ryan Jones home run was pretty memorable, and our pitchers and their performances the whole tournament were incredible. You know, throughout that 2002 season, I remember a lot of our road trips, especially during that rough patch. But the road trips were fun. I think they were times where we came together as a team and ultimately helped us succeed during the conference tournament.
So in 2003, or actually, I guess the summer, fall of 2002, talk about that transition from Coach LeClaire. You wondered if Coach Mack may get the job. He did not. And then we made the decision to hire Randy Mazey from Tennessee. So just talk about that, especially with you being, you know, a two-year guy, and how that left you feeling going into your senior season.
I think those types of transitions are always tough, I guess, whether it's in business or sports, because, you know, the coach is invested in the people that he brings on board, and it's hard from their standpoint to inherit guys and then try and create a culture of their own. So I think that the 2003 year, there was probably some growing pains for the program as a whole, but it, you know, got turned around pretty damn quick with the 04 team and the success that they had. 2003 was a tough year for me towards the end of it too, because you're still dealing with the Coach LeClaire stuff, and I was a pretty streaky player, especially at the plate, and got down on myself quite often. And I think I went into a bit of a hole, and I think I missed Coach LeClaire's involvement in that personal investment in me that I think I touched on earlier. So I think I answered your question in a roundabout way.
Indeed.
Yeah, no doubt. Go ahead, Kyle.
No, I really didn't have anything. I just was saying indeed. And Coach Mazey was a completely different personality than Coach LeClaire. And I would imagine anytime you're dealing with a transition period, it's hard. But those circumstances,
yeah,
I would imagine for some people it would have been very difficult.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to single anybody out, but I know there were players that year that really had an issue with the, you know, the different types of leadership or maybe, you know, just the ways of doing things.
Well, I think also, Bubba, and I wasn't on the team. Luke can probably speak to this. I'm sure there were some players there that after what that team had been through, you know, with Keith and then Eason and all, you know, leading the way, that thought, you know, one of those two was going to get the job.
Yeah, I missed Coach Mack. I mean, obviously he recruited me, and you know, looking back now, I guess Bubba already called me out for being 40. But
hey, I'll be 40 on June 7th, Luke.
All right. I mean, looking back on it, I could have worked harder to get out of that hole. I could have controlled some things on my own to kind of get back on track. And I think I always remember that lesson too now, when things aren't going quite my way, that's the one thing you can do is just grind it out instead of kind of, there were definitely times where I felt sorry for myself.
Yep.
in that 2003 season, like we've already kind of alluded to, it wasn't what we were used to, but at the same time, not a terrible year by any means. And we still made a regional, we're one of the last few in. We went down to Georgia Tech as a 3 seed, and after losing, we lost to, I want to say, South Carolina in the opener. But then after that, we bounced back, and Georgia Tech was the national seed, and we eliminated those guys. I remember Daryl Lawhorn hit a grand slam against them.
Yeah.
And we beat them like 13-4, and then we were eliminated by Stetson.
Yeah. In fact, that South Carolina game, too, we had a real shot. Will Brinson pitched awesome that game. And they did they end up winning it all that that year?
No, they won it all in 2010 and 11 because we beat them in 2009 in the regional. Remember when we beat them in Greenville, and that was the last time they had lost in the NCAA tournament, or were eliminated in the NCAA tournament until 2012 when they fell in the title series when they were looking to three-peat, I think.
Yeah, I think we ran out of pitching there versus Stetson, if I remember correctly, in 04.
Yeah, and like you were saying, that South Carolina game was a competitive game. I don't know if it was 4-2 or 5-3, but we were right there. Kind of similar to the Super Regional games the following year, where we lost a pair of two-run ball games in 2004.
Yeah. And then 0-2 too against Clemson. I think we lost 4-2. We were hanging, and I believe Sam pitched that game. Sam Nairn.
Yeah. We lost 4-2. I think you're right on that. And then we bounced back, and we had beaten Elon. So that game with Clemson was huge, because then Clemson would have had to come out of the losers bracket and beat us twice.
Yeah.
But once we fell to them, we had to beat Georgia Southern, which we did. But then we had to beat Clemson twice, and all their pitching was fresh. And I mentioned Zane Green's home run. That was when they also had Khalil Green, who I guess went on to play for the Padres. But Khalil Green's stance, I remember his feet together in the back of the box, looked like a slow pitch softball.
Yeah. Just ride and glide and hit bombs. He was amazing. That's the best college baseball player I think I came across. He was unreal. In fact, I don't know if we got him out, but that game where we were losing 20 to whatever, he hit, stroked the double off the wall, and he was kind of a weird dude, and he crossed second base, and Jed Sorensen walked up to him and just said, "Knock it off. Like, this is enough." And he didn't really react at all. There's no mercy.
Yeah. I remember that blonde flow that he had when he would take his helmet or hat off and you know, push it back over his head or
out of his eyes.
Yeah, he was a legend.
So, Luke, individually, like, do you recall like any specific games that really stand out as far as, you know, whether it's the combination of your defensive effort or at the plate or both?
The game that Coach LeClair wrote that note against VCU stands out. The series early in the year against Houston, all those Houston games meant a lot. Some of our road trips where we got smoked stand out to me, just because they weren't fun trips. To be honest with you, it's starting to become a little bit more distant. So I remember times with the guys, you know, off the field too, a lot more.
You talked about the camaraderie, especially on that 2002 team. Just tell us about that. It's been well documented as far as Coach LeClair and him giving the seniors, or maybe the entire team, but at least the seniors as they were graduating, purple Bibles. I know Chuck Young from Sports Work Ministry, who actually moved out to Kansas to pastor a church now, we've had him on several times, and he was talking about that tradition.
Yeah, he gave us the purple Bibles and purpose-driven life, and as far as that team goes too, and the camaraderie that we had, a lot of those Greenville natives kind of created that culture, and it was really cool to start to get to know them. And you kind of naturally fall into the flow. You know, guys like Mike Harrington and Bryant Ward and Clayton. That part was a culture shock, just kind of like the enthusiasm for Pearl Jam and just kind of the inside jokes and the lingo that they would use is a lot to kind of get used to. But I remember that, and just everybody had a real witty sense of humor.
Now, what is the deal with Pearl Jam?
I don't know. I mean, cause Jed came from Wisconsin. He was a big Pearl Jam fan. Brian Clayton, Mike, all those guys, that was the band that everybody grew up listening to, I guess, because it was the times. But
yeah, I mean, I'm a Pearl Jam fan, but I didn't know if there was something specific to the baseball team. I mean,
I am too. I wasn't as big of a fan as these guys, but became more after having to listen to all the albums and all the parties that we would have.
Okay, that's interesting. I did not know Pearl Jam was associated with Pirate baseball from that era.
Yep.
Do you do any Vedder impersonation?
I do not. But if you remember, those guys had the Eddie Vedder hair. Some of them have tattoos. they made fun of me. I was kind of like a West Coast rap guy.
Pearl Jam is from the West Coast too. It's a Seattle band. I mean,
that's true. That's true.
That's a good. That brings up a good question, or an interesting question. Cliff's talked about some of his walk-up songs back in the day. What were your walk-up songs?
It was California Love. Yeah, but
okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought when you're talking about your West Coast roots. And I thought you were Tupac.
Yep.
So after your time at East Carolina, moving on. Just talk about what you majored in, first of all, and then, you know, what you've been up to since. Because I know you've done some things in life that have allowed you to still cross paths with a lot of your former teammates or other Pirates who you were aware of, even though you may not have played with them.
Yeah, I was a PR major with a minor in business and didn't know what the hell I wanted to be after college. I knew I wanted to play baseball. And when that ends, you kind of got to figure some things out quickly. So I got into sales for a little bit with the beverage company, with an insurance company. And then I got lucky. I did some lessons at a facility out here in California for a bit. And then I landed a gig with Cytosport, which they were the makers of Muscle Milk. And I caught on with that company early on, and it was part of growing their brand on their sports marketing team. So I ran their team sales division that I called on high school, college, and pro teams, dealing primarily with strength coaches, athletic trainers, and dietitians, and some sport coaches. So I would travel the country, go to trade shows, get to see a lot of the guys at some of these conferences, and was with them for about 10 years. And spent a couple years at UC Berkeley at Cal in that sports marketing realm, sponsorship, if you will. And then now I'm with a company called Honey Stinger that's a natural sports nutrition product that uses honey as a sweetener. And I handle all of our sports marketing efforts, from event sponsorships to athlete relationships and partnerships with teams.
How long have you been with Honey Stinger now, you say?
Oh, man, just about 6 months. So I'll have to send you guys some. Get me your address.
All right, sounds good.
Sounds good, and definitely we'll do that. But I know you were talking about – you've talked about some of the funny times that you had with the guys. I'm kind of wanting to work in reverse a little bit.
Mark Minakazi. Thinking about Kaz because I see that PGX Gloves logo in the bottom right corner of the screen.
Yep.
But just talk about Kaz because I guess in 2003 when you were a senior, the Water Buffalo, he was a freshman. So tell us about Kaz and your friendship with him.
Well, that guy had the best mentality to play baseball because of how much he just enjoyed being out there. And that's what it takes. I mean, and that's why he was so good. It was just, he went out there and played and he enjoyed every minute of it. And I stayed close with him during his minor league career. In fact, my wife and I, when we were first dating, I took her down to San Jose to watch him play with the Giants. And then I did a round of spring training visits with strength coaches of all the MLB teams. And when he was with the Nationals and had texted him and was able to catch on with him before he got going during spring training. So yeah, it was fun following his career and some of the other guys. Had a chance to go see Adam Witter and Daryl Lawhorn here locally with the San Jose Giants. In fact, Daryl, they have that, I'm sure you're familiar with, like the beer batter promotion. And Daryl struck out on purpose so that all the fans would get a free beer. It was a big, big hit.
That's funny. I had not heard that story, but next time we have Daryl on, we had him on. It was actually not for, we were just doing some player interviews. It was not for Jungle Tales, I don't think, but we've had Daryl and Trevor on. I'll have to ask him about intentionally striking out.
Yeah.
But a lot of excellent memories for Pirate baseball for sure around the Lawhorn brothers.
Yeah. I lived with both those guys too. That was a good time. So I obviously saw Kaz a lot living with those two dudes.
So who coined the nickname for Kaz with Water Buffalo? Do you recall?
That was after me, so I think that was the that might have been Coach Mazin.
Okay,
I
think you're right. I think it may have been Coach Mazin that gave him that. And yeah. Then I just remember him, and then like you were saying, that 2004 team, you had Big Walt, Ryan Norwood.
Yeah, I think Kaz came up with Big Walt.
Okay, and you had. You had all kinds of nicknames, all kinds of characters on that team.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good class, Daryl and Kaz and Walt's freshman year. And no egos, too, like, because they were a little bit younger than I was, but they just came in and worked hard. And again, they didn't take themselves too seriously. I mean, Daryl came in was kind of slotted as just a pitcher only. And they broke us up into teams for the Purple and Gold World Series. And it was a little one-sided. Coach Eason landed all the veterans for the most part. And Coach Lowe's with the Purple team got kind of the new crew. And they threw Daryl on our team. And they're like, Coach Clara said, I want to see him hit. And he hit at least three bombs during the Purple and Gold World Series. I can't remember if we won as the Purple team, but and the rest is history for his freshman year.
Yeah, and that freshman season that he had in 2002 was just remarkable. Batting over 400 with right around 20 home runs, a ton of doubles, and just video game like numbers.
Yeah, unreal.
And the funny thing about it is he had been a pitcher.
Yeah, he's. He was like Will Clark.
There for a while, it would have been interesting to see. And oddly enough, Trevor Lawhorn was the one that got an opportunity to pitch in the Super Regional. And I know he had pitched an inning or two before that, maybe against Barton or somebody, Mount Olive or somebody. But really didn't pitch that much. But Coach Mazin didn't hesitate to put him in. He nearly got out of the gym.
Yeah. He's both those guys were awesome ball players.
Couple more things for you, Luke. Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I had one more thing that I'm going to have to drop out, Bubba. I just wanted to ask Luke, as we have opening day today against Rhode Island, hopefully the game will get played at 7 o'clock. How much you keep up with the current Pirates, and what do you think of the job Cliff's doing?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm guilty of tuning in kind of mid-year. So I don't know. You guys have told me that we're looking good this year, and we've got some good arms and a lot of returning position players. So I'm anxious to start following a little bit earlier than I have in the past.
Yeah, no doubt. And hopefully this will finally be the year. Who knows? As we joked before the podcast,
we'll
finally get to go to Omaha, and only 25% of people will be able to go. But you know what? I'll be happy we're there. And Luke, it was good talking to you on my part. I'm going to have to drop out early. I will leave you in good hands with Bubba Rosenbaum. If he wraps you up, let me know.
All right, guys. It was a pleasure.
All right. See you, Kyle. But Luke, that was actually going to be one of my questions. What Kyle was just saying as far as following the program now, and even though you're thousands of miles away with ESPN Plus, that coverage, ECUPirates.com, and then even if you're unable to watch a game, you know, tune in radio with Corey Glore, who we have on consistently for our weekly recap show, Extra Innings, which will be coming your way Sunday night, presented by Next Level Training Center, Trent Britt, and the folks there do a tremendous job. But just talk about the exposure that the game has, especially for the Pirates, because that's obviously who you care about the most.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And, you know, the way that streaming is going and making it easier for fans to follow the teams that they like, it's pretty special. I'm excited to watch the team this year.
So, final thing for you as we're wrapping this up. When the Pirates bust down that door and get to Omaha, I know we're going to see you at TD Ameritrade, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep. Even if we've got a mask up, I'll be there.
I about caught myself. I started to say Rosenblatt, and I was like, I said, no, TD Ameritrade.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, didn't get a chance to make it to Rosenblatt before it was imploded and torn down several years ago now.
Same here.
But, Luke, it's been great catching up. We really appreciate your time this afternoon. And we look forward to having you back on the show sometime down the road to talk East Carolina baseball.
Right on. Go Pirates.
Pirate Nation, that is former East Carolina shortstop from 2002 and 2003, Luke Cherry.
You've been listening to 23 Jungle Tales on the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates. All these interviews and our other content can be seen on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. The audio can be heard anywhere you listen to our show, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show. Go Pirates!